They can be found in the ranks of parents and siblings, relatives and friends, educators and administrators, and wherever people have incorporated separatism to such a degree that there is no longer any empathy, compassion, or respect for others. The saddest results are when the ones exploited try to clamp down on their feelings, to the point where their bodies carry the tension of a time bomb. Some victims turn to exploiting others themselves, perhaps out of revenge, or perhaps because they think that's the only way they can get touched. Some, apparently calm and nice people, explode without warning in a furious attack on whoever is nearby. Some live lives of unhappy isolation, fearful of the slightest human contact. Some are healed by compassionate healers. And some even heal themselves. If our society had more safe and acceptable ways of touching and being touched, we might have a lot less despair, violence, and illness to deal with. Well, part of my small contribution toward that goal will be the techniques I share with you now. Self-touch. In the absence of someone else to touch you, the thing to do is touch yourself. Touching benefits your mind and your body because of endorphins and other substances released when your skin is touched, even by yourself. While your body and mind probably have preferred touchers, you can still gain a lot of benefit from touching yourself. So here is a non-sexual, self-touch exercise you can perform alone. By the way, I have nothing against sexual self-touch exercises, I'm just not going to teach you any. Every step will help to relieve a lot of tension. You can do this with or without light clothing. It also has a much better effect if you can do it with a real sense of caring about yourself. Step 1. Start by massaging your scalp or pulling your hair, gently or strongly, your preference. An amazing amount of tension accumulates in your scalp, and because of this, some people find this exercise very pleasurable. Step 2. Place the fingers of each hand along the center of your forehead and drag them outward and across your temples. Drag your fingers down along the sides of your nose, out and across your cheekbones, and down your jawline. Drag from the center outward along your upper and lower lips. Step 3. Massage your ears. Step 4. Massage your hands by dry washing them, and be sure to squeeze each finger. Rub the center of each palm and the area on the back of your hand between the thumb and forefinger. Step 5. Run your hand slowly or quickly over the entire front of your body, right on top of your clothing if you have any on. Step 6. Use a towel to rub the entire backside of your body, again, over any clothing you have on. If you have a so-called Chinese back scratcher, use that too. It's a wonderful device for relieving back tension even when you don't itch. Step 7. Massage your feet, if you have time, and wash your hands before you eat or touch anyone else. If you don't have time for all of this, you can do a quickie by massaging your arms and hands and giving yourself a fast hug. Huddling. This is great for two or more people. It takes us way back to our primitive origins. Some monkeys like to do it for hours. As extremely simple as it sounds, you may expect some mind-blowing and body-boggling experiences, especially if you do it for extended periods. Clothing is optional. So is music and aroma. Version 1. For two people. Sit on the floor, supporting each other back to back. Stay there as long as you like, but give it at least 5 minutes to get some effects. You may feel warmth after a short time, of course, and perhaps tingling. Some people will eventually feel waves of energy, relaxation, or pleasure. Version 2. For two people. Get into a comfortable mutual holding position on the floor, against a wall, or in a chair. Don't do anything except be comfortable with each other. If you need to move after a while to get more comfortable, do so gently and minimally. In addition to the effects mentioned above, there may also be a sensation of merging with the other, and it's easy to enter a state of dozing or daydreaming. Version 3. For three or more people. Use any combination of back-to-back, folding, draping, leg, or arm entwining, comfortably close positions, and just be there for a while. Breathe, but don't speak. Move slowly and minimally when you have to. This usually works best on a floor with or without pillows. Go to the bathroom before you start. Besides warmth, tingling, relaxation, pleasure, dozing, daydreaming, and merging, the group experience in particular lends itself to the potential for visionary and blissful experiences. The main benefits from huddling, from the point of view of this program, are physical and emotional healing. Share your experiences afterward. Huddling also tends to stimulate sexual feelings in some people. Depending on who's involved and what the circumstances are, you'll have to judge for yourself what kind of behavior is appropriate. Just remember that it's possible to experience sexual feelings without doing anything about them. Stay relaxed and just let them be there and enjoy them without obligation. The sexual energy itself can be very healing for the body. Healing hands. People often tell me that they think they have healing power, or that a psychic has told them they have healing power, and they ask me what they can do about it. I usually tell them to start healing. Everyone has healing power. Not only is everyone's body constantly engaged in healing itself, often in spite of all the things a person may be doing to interfere with it, but everyone has the power to help others heal themselves too. Right now, this minute, without any fancy rituals. Rituals are good. They have authority, and they can convince unknowing or uncertain people that they have the power and the right to start helping others. There's nothing wrong with that. People also have the right to charge whatever they think they or their services are worth, and people have the right to pay whatever they think a person or a service is worth. No problem so far. My only beef is when people think they can't or are not allowed to heal without a ritual or someone else's permission. The fact is, if you're human, you can heal. This is a program for humans, by the way. If you're an animal or a plant or a rock or a star, you need to be listening to a different tape. Of course, as with anything, some people are naturally better at healing than others, but everyone has the talent to some degree. It's easy to say that everyone has the ability to heal. How do I prove it? Well, I don't have to prove it to you. You can prove it to yourself with a few experiments. First, rub the palms of your hands together and hold your hands with your palms facing each other about 6 to 8 inches apart. You should be aware of a tingling sensation from the rubbing. But now, move your hands toward each other in a slightly bouncy kind of way, as if you were thinking about clapping but couldn't make up your mind whether to do it or not. Pay attention to anything you may feel with your palms. If you're like most people, you will feel a slight sensation of resistance, as if you were squeezing a soft balloon or pushing similar poles of two magnets together. This is an energy field you are feeling, and it's what some healers use for healing. Second, line up 3 glasses of orange, grapefruit, or apple juice, 3 cups of coffee or tea, or 3 glasses of Chablis wine. You could use plain water for this, but the experimental results are more definite when something has a bit of bite to it. Rub your hands together and then hold one of the cups or glasses in your hands for 1 or 2 minutes. Then taste the liquid. Then taste the liquid in the other 2 containers. Taste the first one again. Notice any difference? You have just healed the liquid. Typically, the healed liquid has less bite or bitterness. It becomes more mellow. Some people think it tastes sweeter. Some don't think that the change is an improvement. The next time you're around someone who has an ache or a pain and who is willing to let you experiment on them, rub your hands till they tingle and just lay them on the person's sore area for a minute or two. You'll get much better results if you keep your attention on what you're doing. I know that some systems teach that the energy just flows through you, so you can let your mind wander, but energy flows where attention goes, and your hands will have more energy if you stay focused. If the person experiences any relief at all, the experiment is a success. And by employing the following techniques, you can amp up the power of this kind of healing touch. Humming. Something that works very well is the combination of sound and touch. All you have to do is hum while your hands are touching yourself or someone else. That's right, just hum while you touch. To get a direct sense of what the effect is, hold your palms apart and facing without rubbing them first. Now hum. In addition to the vibration in your body, you will feel a tingling in your hands and perhaps even the soft pressure sensation between them. Wherever you have aches or pains or places that need healing, you can put your hands or fingers on them and hum your way to health. Actually, it will help to relieve tension and speed up your body's natural healing process faster than touch alone. You can experiment with humming high notes or low notes or even your favorite tunes. I found that the effect is stronger if you keep your attention on where your hands are touching while you hum. The effect is also stronger when you hum with your mouth closed, because this produces a stronger vibration within your body, which transfers more energy to your hands. Mumbling mode. A variation on humming is mumbling. Mumbling is speaking with your mouth closed and your lips moving, and it produces an effect like humming, with the added benefit of subliminal suggestion. When you apply your fingers or hands to an area of the body for healing, instead of humming, you mumble affirmations, blessings, or directions. I did this in a taxi for a friend who had sudden stomach cramps, and in about 3 minutes, she was fine again. It's a very handy technique for all kinds of situations. I use it on my own neck and shoulders when I'm at the computer for too long, and often, right afterward, I just turn my neck and my spine adjusts itself. It's also great for easing sore muscles after a workout and relieving your own headaches. However, be aware that some people may be distracted or irritated by the mumbling and will not respond well to it. Blanket forgiveness. Blanket forgiveness is an awesome healing technique that uses both touch and words. It is awesome because it works so quickly, and it is awesome because you don't even have to know whom you are forgiving for it to work. It is based on an assumption that any physical condition involving swelling or infection also contains an emotional component of repressed anger or guilt. Notice that I didn't say it was caused by emotions, just that it can be useful to assume that emotions are involved in causing at least some of the stress that is maintaining or aggravating the condition. If you can relieve the emotional tension, it will help the body heal more quickly. The actual technique is very simple. With your hand or fingers, you lightly touch the area that needs healing, while at the same time, you repeat the words, "Whatever this is related to, I forgive it completely." Do this for as long as you can or until you get some relief. It's likely that you'll feel various sensations as you do this, such as tingling or movement or relaxation, and maybe even pain relief. The more that anger or guilt is connected with the condition, the more quickly and dramatically you will experience healing effects. Even if angry emotions are only a small part of the malady, there will be some degree of benefit. As I said, you don't have to know consciously who or what the emotions are directed at. Just holding the idea of forgiveness while touching the infected or swollen area is enough to cause subconscious changes that will ease a lot of stress. The touch itself provides a certain amount of energy, as well as helping to keep your mind focused on forgiving. Of course, if you do know who or what you are resenting or feeling guilty about, then forgiving him or her or it can make the technique even more effective. The most astounding personal experience I had with this technique was when I woke up one day with an abscessed tooth and extreme tension in my jaw. My teeth were so sensitive that I could barely close my mouth because the slightest touch of my upper and lower teeth set off waves of pain. Obviously, this called for a trip to the dentist, and even though I had a good one in mind, I decided to try something else first. To begin with, I assumed that there was anger involved. Then I asked myself with whom I might be angry. Immediately a woman came to mind who had reneged on an important commitment the day before. I thought I had handled it with peaceful forbearance, but my body was now telling me that all I had done was to suppress my anger. So, very gently, I placed one finger against the place on my jaw where the swelling of the abscess was most tender, and began to repeat my forgiveness affirmation, directing it toward the woman in question. As I recall, the phrasing was something like, "Whatever so-and-so did or didn't do, I forgive her completely." The reaction was so sudden that even I was stunned. The pain immediately began to ease off, and I could feel the swelling start to lessen. Within 30 minutes, there was no trace of an abscess nor any pain or tenderness. It was as if the condition had never existed. So my dentist didn't get my business that day, but I eventually used his services for other things. Although knowing whom or what it is that needs forgiving is not really necessary, there is a way to narrow down the choices. Because of deep cross-cultural associations, many people around the world make a conscious or subconscious relationship between women and the left side of the body and men and the right side of the body. It's very useful from a healing point of view to assume that problems on the left side of the body have an emotional component that relates to women in one's life, and problems on the right side have to do with men. I have also found that an emotional conflict with a strong woman may be part of problems on the right side, and similar conflicts with a meek man may be part of problems on the left side. If you're working on a physical problem on one side of your body or the other, let your mind play with the idea that your relationship with a man or woman might be involved on the appropriate side, and see what comes up. In any case, consider the possibility that emotional conflict, usually anger or resentment, is at least partly involved in a problem you might have, and try to relieve that before you go on to other healing methods. At the very least, it will help to make any other methods you use more effective. Enjoy the wonders of touch. It is one of the most powerful of all healing modalities in any form it takes, from a handshake to a hug to a full body massage. There is the effect of exchanging energy, of course, but even more important is the way in which touch serves as the bridge between beings. In a world where ideas of separation have such great influence, touch becomes the surest way of making connections. A healing touch, empowered by love and compassion, becomes a means to greater awareness and a source of joy for the reacher and the reached. The powers of words, imagination, and touch have this in common. They each produce physical, emotional, or mental changes, and therefore they each produce a movement of energy. Healing is a process of making changes in the body, the feelings, and the mind. Instant healing is simply a way of making those changes more quickly. Whenever there is change, energy is involved, and there are ways of working more directly with energy in order to produce those changes. We will now shift our primary focus to the movement of energy. Before I look at specific applications of energy to the instant healing process, it would be useful to take a closer look at energy itself. What is energy? Humans are conditioned to think of matter as something solid, and so it is sometimes very hard to get away from the idea that the smallest bits of matter must be solid somethings. It is even harder to get away from the idea that energy is a something. Energy is defined in physics as the capacity to do work, that is, the property of one system that enables it to influence another system. One example of energy is rain falling because of gravity and eroding a hillside. Another is adrenaline releasing sugar into your bloodstream to be used as fuel by your cells to give your brain and body a boost. Nonetheless, many people persist in thinking of energy as something like a brick. If you have a brick and you hand it to someone else, now he has a brick and you don't. But energy isn't like a brick at all. Energy is much more like an ocean wave that gets its energy from the wind which gets its energy from something else, and so on. Where there is energy, there is movement or change. And where there is movement or change, there is energy. Because everything is apparently moving or changing, it's easy to see everything as a potential source of energy. Also, this movement seems to be in the form of waves. As humans, we experience life primarily through sight, sound, and touch. To see, hear, and feel, there has to be a particular kind of phenomenon existing at a particular range of frequencies that can be perceived by specially organized receptors. In other words, seeing, hearing, and feeling require a nervous system that can process information received by the eyes, ears, and skin. That information reaches those receptors in the form of light waves, sound waves, and vibration. Of course, it's more involved than that, but those are the basics. If energy is movement, and matter is moving, then matter is energy. If movement occurs in waves, then what we perceive as matter consists of different kinds of waves. And if one kind of wave can influence the behavior of another kind of wave, as wind influences water, or fire influences wind, and if humans can find a way in which they themselves can generate waves that will influence the behavior of other waves, why then maybe they can use that ability for instant healing. I'm going to use those assumptions as a starting point for the discussion of this topic. Where do waves come from? Waves are started by other waves. If you've ever watched a field of grain or grass being buffeted by the wind, you may have noticed how the pressure of the wind rolls across the field in waves, not as one solid flattening effect. That's because wind moves in waves. Earthquakes move in waves. Sunlight moves in waves. According to our assumptions, everything moves in waves, and waves make waves. Earlier, I discussed how stress produces tension that interferes with healing. Stress was defined as resulting from mutual forces working against each other. In terms of energy, I would say that the tension of stress comes from two waves colliding. If you can use another wave to redirect or modify one of the colliding waves, then the natural process of healing can take place. And the more quickly you can do that, the more instant the healing will be. For practical purposes, I'll consider three sources of energy that can be used for instant healing: physical, emotional, and mental. We will first direct our attention to physical energy. There are a myriad number of ways in which physical energy can be employed for healing purposes. I'll concentrate on a few very useful, specific methods, rather than provide an exhaustive survey of all the possibilities. First, water. Yes, I know that practically everyone is aware of the importance of drinking more water to avoid dehydration. And bottled water is available almost everywhere. On a recent trip to China, I had no trouble finding bottled water at a market stall in every town I visited, and even some airlines make sure their passengers are supplied with plenty of water. It's easy to forget that this is a very new phenomenon. However, in my classes and courses, I've found that many people, including those who bring their bottles of water to class, still aren't aware of some of the instant healing benefits of water. When the body gets dehydrated, it goes into a state of stress, and the resulting tension can produce symptoms that may not seem to be associated with a lack of water. One of the things I discovered on my own was that if I wake up in the morning with aches and pains, a glass or two of water will almost always make them disappear, as if by magic. The effect seems to take place much faster than the time it would take for the water to get from my stomach to the cells that might need it. If I were to assume that the water acts like a wave of energy, then I could say that the water energy moves one or both of the colliding stress waves, and the release of tension allows the body to heal itself. A physiologist might throw fits at such a theory, but it doesn't hurt to play with ideas. The fact of the matter is that it works. In addition to morning aches and pains, I've found that a glass or two of water will often produce instant benefits for backache, headache, joint pain, nausea, cold or flu-like symptoms, and anxiety. Another healing characteristic of water is its ability to neutralize a positive electric field. Under certain conditions, a static electric field can build up on and around the body and cause considerable stress. This can happen during dry winds, such as the Santa Anas of California and the Konas of Hawaii. It can also happen when winds blow through natural canyons or the concrete canyons of a city, and when air blows through air conditioning ducts in buildings, planes, and cars. Such fields may build up as well during a high-pressure weather system when the air doesn't seem to be moving at all. Although a positive electric field may build up around the body as a whole, it tends to concentrate wherever there is metal in contact with the skin, or where there are rings, necklaces, bracelets, watches, and the like. The electric field may cause you to feel some of the symptoms I mentioned, such as headache or nausea. Taking a shower or bath, wiping the skin with a damp cloth, or touching with a wet finger the metal that is in contact with your body are all good ways of discharging the field and producing an instant feeling of relief. Breath. Yeah, sure, it's important to breathe, and? Of course it's important to breathe. So important that a lot of different cultures have developed special breathing exercises that are supposed to make you healthy, wealthy, wise, and full of superpowers. Over the years, I have experimented with quite a few styles of breathing, some very exotic. By my analysis, all of the benefits of every style can be derived from one master technique, and that is deeper breathing. Breathing occurs in waves. In addition to the cycle of inhaling and exhaling, there's a wave pulse that goes up and down the torso when you breathe, sometimes in sync with the breathing and sometimes not. The primary benefit of breathing is the provision of oxygen to your cells, and a major secondary benefit is the fact that breathing acts as a pump for your lymph system, helping to eliminate toxins from your body. If the breath waves are small, that is, if your breathing is shallow, you take in less oxygen and get rid of fewer toxins. This makes you more susceptible to illness, lowers your pain threshold, reduces your physical strength, and fogs your brain. Deeper breathing helps to change all that. The problem, naturally, is that under stress, we all tend toward shallow breathing, and for many people, shallow breathing becomes a habit. Deeper breathing often requires conscious effort. It might be a good idea to train yourself to remember to breathe more deeply whenever you feel under stress as a kind of self-help first aid technique. Instead of a sign saying "think" above your desk, put one that says "breathe." In addition to just plain deeper breathing, there is one breathing exercise that I have found to be extremely useful. Some yogic techniques emphasize holding the breath at one or both ends of the cycle for a certain number of counts. So you would inhale and hold for four counts, and exhale and hold for four counts or more. According to my research, there's a valuable physiological benefit to this, at least at the inhalation end. In simple terms, when you hold your breath for a few moments at the top of the inhale, there is a mixing of oxygen and carbon dioxide, which enables more oxygen to be absorbed by the red blood cells. The instant healing benefit of this is more energy, faster pain relief, and clearer thinking. In my experience, holding the breath for three or four counts is sufficient for the effect to be felt. However, it does usually take more than one breathing cycle. Strange waves. I had a really hard time figuring out how to present this idea. Although some of the concepts I've presented are rather unorthodox, I wanted to keep the techniques as practical and understandable as possible without sounding esoteric or too far out. What I'm about to describe is so practical, however, that I'm going to risk sounding weird to those unfamiliar with subtle energy research. To keep it simple, not all forms of energy are understood or even acknowledged by mainstream science, or by anyone for that matter. Even things that are not understood, however, can be put to practical use, as long as their effects can be shown to be beneficial. What follows are some simple ways of using a source of energy for healing that, according to conventional knowledge, doesn't seem to make any sense. These ways have been experimented with and experienced by thousands of people all over the world with good results. Those who would like more background can read my book, Earth Energies. Otherwise, you can just try them out for yourself. Theoretically, the two devices I'll describe generate waves that tend to relieve tension and thus assist the natural healing process of the body. First, the wave pad. Take 1 square foot of aluminum foil and cover it with 1 square foot of plastic cling wrap. Now fold it over several times to make a square or rectangular pad suitable for placing on a part of your body where you are suffering discomfort. It doesn't matter whether the foil is on the inside or the outside. You can attach it with tape or any other way you choose and leave it in place until you get relief. This is particularly good for helping aches, pains, bruises, and nausea, and for helping to speed up healing of any kind. Second, the wave plate. Cut 2 6-inch squares of acrylic or styrene plastic and 1 6-inch square of aluminum foil. Sandwich the foil between the plastic and tape the plastic pieces together. Use this plate as a coaster for water and other liquids. Allow about 30 seconds for the liquid to be charged with energy. Drinking the energized liquid will provide a subtly beneficial effect for your whole body, helping to keep tension levels down, and the energized water can be used topically on the skin. Many people will notice that coffee, tea, or young wine will have a more mellow taste after sitting on the wave plate for a while. You can also expand the size of the wave plate to 12 inches square and use it as a foot pad at your desk or in front of the TV or by your bed. Many people will immediately feel an invigorating effect within a minute or two of resting their feet on the plate, whether they are sitting or standing. Emotional energy. Now, the same people who think of energy as bricks tend to think of emotions as chicken feathers. Good emotions mean you are full of soft, dry feathers that give you a warm, fuzzy feeling. Bad emotions mean that you're filled with damp, lumpy feathers that give you an unpleasant feeling. By this reasoning, if you feel bad and you want to feel good, you have to take out the wet feathers, the bad emotions, and replace them with dry feathers, or good emotions. As a theory about emotions, it doesn't work very well, because an emotion isn't a thing any more than energy is. If you gain any healing benefits from expressing anger, grief, sadness, or whatever, it isn't because you've gotten rid of anything, it's because you've changed behavior and started energy moving and have released tension that came from trying not to feel the emotion. The potential for the same emotion to reoccur is still there, unless you change your relationship to the memory that triggered it. However, immediate healing benefits can come from moving directly into a positive emotion without even bothering to release the negative one. At a conference in Colorado, I attended an evening discussion on how to be happy that was given by a young Frenchman. His message was deceptively simple. If you want to be happy, just be happy. Most of the evening's discussion went like this in a question and answer format. Question: how can I be happy if I lost my job? Answer: be happy. Question: how can I be happy if I'm all alone? Answer: be happy. Question: how can I be happy if I'm sick? Answer: be happy. A lot of people left the discussion just shaking their heads. They couldn't grasp the idea that happiness is a choice. It comes from dwelling on what you like rather than on what you don't like. Outside events or the behavior of other people are not what make you unhappy. Unhappiness derives from actively or passively resisting events and behaviors. Resistance creates tension, and enough tension creates or amplifies illness. Happiness and other positive emotions relieve tension and support the body's natural healing abilities. The theory sounds good, but what about the practice? It's one thing to tell someone to be happy, and quite another for a person to be able to do it. It's like advising someone to be well when he's sick. Without a way to do it, the advice is empty. Let me show you some ways to generate positive emotional states to help your healing. If you're in a bad emotional state, you won't feel like using them. So it might be helpful to think of them as emotional medicine that you take if you want to get well. Favorite focus. If you are hurting, physically or emotionally, it really does help you feel better to think of your favorite things, whether they're brown paper packages tied up with string or anything else. It does much more than just distract you. It relaxes muscles, releases endorphins, and stimulates a lot of other good healing stuff. The catch is, you really have to take the time to do it. Take at least a minute, anytime or anywhere, to fill your mind with memories or imaginings of things you like. For healing purposes, the more time you spend on it, the better. But try it in 1 minute chunks to start, at least. Love power. Some years ago, my organization received an unsolicited box full of red, pinback metal buttons with the words, "I am loved," written on them. With them was a story about a man whose wife was critically ill in a hospital. On one visit, he told her, "Just remember, you are loved." When he left, she took that idea and dwelt on it as much as she could, especially when fears came up. According to the story, her recovery was fast and was called miraculous. We were asked to distribute the pins in the hope that they might help other people, which we did. And they did. Since then, I've used this idea on myself and taught it to others with extremely good results. Because it isn't easy for many people to just start thinking that way, here's an approach I developed to make it easier. Take a good look at your present life, including your immediate environment and the significant people in your life. Then, carefully note everything you can that provides you with any kind of benefit. Finally, interpret that benefit as a sign that you are loved by the source of it. Assume that the fragrance of a flower is a gift of love. Assume that the air you breathe is a gift of love. Assume that all the things that people do for you, from the strangers who provide electricity for you, to the help of friends and family, and all the good that the universe provides, are signs that you are loved. To the degree that you can make the signs of love more important than any other assumptions about your world, you'll experience a remarkable increase in healing. Positive posture. Recently, I was on an extended trip that was physically exhausting and mentally stressful. After 2 weeks, I began to come down with cold symptoms such as nasal drip, stuffed sinuses, and sneezing. Because of past experience, I knew that these were stress symptoms and not a bug. Of all the techniques I used to relieve the stress, the most instant relief came from shifting into a feeling state of confidence. It was not a matter of feeling confident about any particular thing, it was simply a confident feeling in general. Within seconds of shifting into that feeling state, all my cold symptoms were completely gone, and that's about as instant as you can get. My nose was dry, my sinuses were clear, and the tickling urge to sneeze disappeared. I had been able to bring on the state merely by thinking about it, due to a lot of practice doing so. However, as soon as I let my attention wander from the feeling of confidence, all the cold symptoms immediately came back. Fortunately, in learning how to share this technique with others, I have discovered that the easiest way for most people to enter and sustain this state is by assuming a confident posture. The assumption of the posture of confidence reminds the body of the feeling of confidence, and as long as one maintains the posture, the feeling remains, with all of its healing benefits. Mental energy. I'm not going to discuss thoughts or telepathy in this section. I'm going to talk about attention. When you put attention on something, a vitally important event occurs. That event is a wave. It's a wave of energy. And I'm not going to discuss what kind of energy because I don't know, and no one I know knows, although theories abound. For the sake of convenience, I call it mental energy. But so far it can't be directly measured or sensed, and there's no way to scientifically prove it exists. However, and that's a big however, a wave happens when you put your attention on something, and we know that because of the effects. When you put your attention on something, that something changes, often in ways that can be measured scientifically. Using my wave theory, attention directs a wave of mental energy toward whatever the attention is on, and that influences the wave energy of the object of the attention. The nature of the effect depends on the degree of attention, the duration of the attention, and the information carried by the wave of mental energy. Attention itself is moved by one of the most mysterious forces of the universe, the will. The main characteristic of the will is that it starts energy moving. It creates waves. You can have an intention, but it takes will to carry it out. You can have a desire, but it takes will to achieve it. You can have a wish, but it takes will to fulfill it. You can make a decision, but it takes will to implement it. And even though one can find ways to rationalize it or to justify it, no one knows where it comes from. So forget about that part. Assume that the power of will exists. What then? Then comes applying it. There are two vital aspects to effective willing. Here now is one of the most useful secrets you will ever encounter in your whole life. The first aspect of willing is intending something to happen. This is not just having an intention or holding an intent. Those are weak-willed variations that may or may not have an effect over a period of time, depending a lot on the strength of other forces. No, I'm talking about actively intending, with as much confident expectation as you can muster. The second aspect is just as important. You apply your will to forces that already exist or that you are going to use. Many people give up on willpower because they try to use it directly to make something change, and that's not how willpower works best. It works best by generating waves that influence waves of existing or potential energy. Instead of willing a cancerous tumor to instantly disappear, it's more effective to will your body to use all its resources, which could include its own immune system, medicine you are taking, or even surgery you are going to have, to make it disappear. Your will, added to your body's natural inclination to heal itself, makes a very powerful combination. Here are some experiments you can perform yourself to test the power of will. You can use words, imagination, and or touch to direct your will, but remember that they are not the source of power here. Your results will be determined by the intensity of your intent. Number 1. Opening a jar. Find an unopened jar of something, one that's very hard to open. After your first unsuccessful try, mentally tell the cap to open easily, or tell your hand to open it easily, and or imagine seeing and feeling it happen. At the same time, will it to happen. The strength of the seal and the strength of your hand are factors to take into account, and it might possibly take you more than one try, but the difference from the first try will be very noticeable. Number 2. Lifting an object. Pick up any fairly heavy object that you can lift with one hand, such as a rock or a full bottle of wine or a statuette. Then will it to be lighter and lift it again. The difference will be very noticeable. Number 3. making your finger grow. Just so you don't freak out, I want you to know that the effect you're about to produce is only temporary. The point here is to demonstrate the power of will to influence your own body. For some reason, a few rare people don't seem to be able to produce the effect. It could be that their doubts are interfering with the process. Anyway, you start by finding the more or less horizontal crease on both wrists, that is just below your palm. You bring both wrists together, at the crease, and flatten your hands together, like you were going to pray. Pay attention to your middle fingers. For most people, they will be the same height. In that case, leave one hand up and put the other one down. If one of your middle fingers is longer than the other, leave the shorter one up and put the longer one down. Now, put all of your attention on the middle finger of the hand that is up, and will it to grow. Tell it to grow. Imagine it growing. And most of all, want it to grow. Keep this up intensely for 1 minute. Then bring up your other hand, put your wrists together at the crease, and flatten your hands against each other. Surprise! Will directs your attention, and attention influences events. The following techniques for directing and strengthening attention have proven very effective in instant healing. The Eye Relaxer Technique. When my eyes get stressed, I do something to relax them, and my vision comes back to normal, which for me is 20/20. With this technique, I can read 6-point type at a distance of 6 inches without glasses, contacts, or surgery, although my eyes are over 60 years old. Sometimes, for a quick relaxer, I squeeze my eyes shut tightly 3 to 5 times, and that generates relaxing waves of energy that improve vision. But that's not the technique I'm talking about. For a longer-lasting, beneficial effect, you have to look at things differently. A whole lot of people develop the habit of trying to grab things with their eyes. They treat the verb to look as if it meant to lock. The effort of trying to hold on to what they see and even pull it toward them creates a great amount of tension in the eye muscles, which often distorts their vision. Actually, everything that you see is coming to you. You don't have to do a thing other than receive it. However, if you've developed the habit of eye grabbing, or if your eyes get stressed or strained for any other reason, you may want to do something a little more active to relax your eyes and obtain better vision. The process, however, isn't really very active. Just put your attention on the back of your head and keep it there while you're looking at something. Breathing deeply and slowly while you do that is helpful, and so is imagining that your eyes are sitting at the back of long tunnels leading to the back of your head, or putting your hand on the back of your head to help you maintain the focus. The main effect, however, comes from sustaining the back of the head focus. At first, it may take a while to get good improvement in your vision, but with practice, you'll be able to see better very quickly, instantly, so to speak. The Pico Pico Technique. Pico Pico is a Hawaiian word meaning center to center, and I learned the technique from my uncle. Basically, it consists of shifting your attention from one place to another in conjunction with deeper breathing. The breathing assists in maintaining the attention and seems to amplify the mental energy. There are numerous variations to this technique and many applications. I will give you 3 that are most useful for instant healing. Any of them can be used while sitting, standing, walking, or lying down. First, begin any of the techniques with the Pico Pico tune-up. Inhale with your attention on the top of your head. Exhale with your attention on your navel. Intend to relax or be energized as you wish. A lot of people try to visualize energy moving from the top of the head to the navel while doing this, but not only is that unnecessary, it can even interfere with the process. Pico Pico works best when you give up trying to make something happen and just let the attention do the work. only move your attention from your head to your navel. Don't try to move the energy. This technique is useful for mild anxiety, low levels of tension, when you need a quick energy boost, and for practicing the technique. Now, technique number one, the Pico Pico De-Stressor. Inhale with your attention as far above your head as you can. I often use the stars as a focus, but the clouds or sky are also good. Exhale with your attention as far below your feet as you can. The center of the earth works well, and so does the ground beneath your feet. Intend wellness. In Mongolia, I taught this technique to a local shaman who had a sudden onset of headache and nausea symptoms. In her belief system, this might have been a psychic attack from an enemy, but I suggested that she try this technique before doing anything else. If she was just experiencing heavy stress, then the technique would help. If the technique didn't change the way she was feeling, she could still do her own thing. The technique worked in a few minutes, so she didn't have to engage in any defensive rituals that time. I have used this technique myself in many severely stressful situations, and so have others, with instant to rapid healing effects. Technique number two, the Pico Pico Harmonizer. Inhale with your attention on your navel. Exhale with your attention on any part of your body that needs tension release or healing. Because this helps to increase circulation instantly, it is very good for stiff or sore muscles, but it really shines as an instant healing technique for numbness of the limbs due to a cramped position while sleeping or sitting. If I wake up in the morning with a numb arm or hand, all I have to do is less than 30 seconds of this Pico Pico, and the numbness is gone, without any pain or excessive tingling at all. Technique number three, the Pico Pico Incorporator. Inhale with all your attention on something outside of yourself that has qualities or associations that you desire. Exhale with your attention on a part of your body where you want those qualities or associations to manifest, and imagine the external object of attention in miniature at that location. Intend the appropriate effect. In London, I was walking in a park with some students during a break in a seminar, and one of them told me he had a badly strained back. He showed me that he was unable to bend forward more than 10 degrees without a sharp pain. There was a breeze blowing, and I pointed out the leaves of an oak tree that were fluttering in the wind. I taught him this technique and told him to use the moving leaves for the focus of his attention. He did the technique during the 15-minute walk back to the classroom, and by the time we arrived, he was able to bend over almost 90 degrees without pain. He had inhaled with his attention on the moving leaves, and when he exhaled, he had imagined those leaves moving in his back. On another occasion, I woke up with a painfully stiff neck after moving furniture the day before. While still in bed, I played one of my favorite CDs and did this technique, inhaling with my attention on the source of the music and exhaling with my attention on my neck, while imagining that the music was playing in my body. After half an hour, the painful stiffness was gone. Objects of attention suitable for many healing needs are anything that moves, anything that melts or dissolves, anything that is peaceful or quiet, anything energetic, and anything that is strong. The Mind Blower Technique. In the past, I have called this repatterning, or the repetition technique, but neither of those does it justice. So I changed the name to reflect its awesome power. What else would you call a technique that enables you to heal burns, cuts, bruises, and even broken bones in just a few minutes? This will probably produce more skepticism than anything else I've presented, but the proof is in the practice. Several times I've said that the body has a natural inclination to heal itself. Now I'm going to rephrase that a bit. Based on empirical research, I'm convinced that the body has a natural inclination to heal itself instantly. Unfortunately, in the healing field, it is taken for granted that the body needs time to heal. I disagree. I think what takes time is reducing stress and redirecting energy waves so that the body can do its healing without restraint. Experience indicates that the sooner you can reduce stress and redirect energy, the more quickly the body will heal. And the mind blower technique can help people to do that with amazing speed. When the body is injured, it immediately mobilizes all of its available resources to repair itself. However, the body gets its information about current reality from three sources: immediate sensory data from the environment, its own memories of sensory data, and the mind's imagination regarding past, present, and future sensory data. It then attempts to correlate the information from these three sources in order to respond appropriately to a given situation. Ideally, the memory data contains valuable information on how the body has coped with such situations before, and the mind's imagination can reinforce past successes, reinforce present coping strategies, and guide future progress. That's how it could work, and even does on rare occasions with rare individuals. Fortunately, the body usually does its part of the healing job quite well. Unfortunately, the mind seldom does. Instead of helping the body, the minds of most people hinder it. I feel safe in saying most people. Otherwise, the state of health and healing in the world would be very different. Most often, what happens is that while the body is busy coping, the mind is recreating the injury in imagination, reacting with anger, and anticipating fearful results. All of these add tremendous additional stress to the situation and inhibit the healing process. As if that weren't bad enough, the body also has to deal with memories of past mental reactions to an injury. One solution would be to quiet the mind and put it to work at helping the body rather than interfering with it. That's what the mind blower technique does. I know it doesn't sound very mind-blowing, and the name is only valid because the effects are astounding in terms of current expectations. As more people become familiar with it and use it, I'll have to change the name again. There are two sides to this technique. First, I'll tell you how the physical side works. When you receive an injury, what you do with your body in this technique is to, insofar as possible, relax your muscles and do a quasi-repetition of the action that produced the injury. A quasi-repetition is an action that almost duplicates the original action. The difference is that you complete the action by stopping short of, or bypassing, the original traumatic contact. It's rather like the fireman I told you about earlier, the one who healed his burns by imagining that the burning spray of hot oil never touched him. For example, if you burned your finger by touching something hot, you would immediately repeat the action of moving your finger toward the source of the heat, but you would stop short of touching it again by a safe distance, doing this again and again until the pain subsides. This usually happens in less than a minute. If you got your fingers caught in a door, you would leave your fingers in place and repeat the movement of the door until just before it touched your fingers. If you stubbed your toe, you would repeatedly swing your foot toward whatever you stubbed it against, stopping short of contact. If you hit your finger with a hammer, you would swing the hammer toward your finger in the same way without contact. If you cut yourself with a knife, you would repeat the cutting action without contact. Of course, you would stop the blood flow first, if necessary. In all these cases and others, you would continue the repetitive action until the pain subsides. If, for any reason, it is impossible or inconvenient to interact with the original object that caused the injury, then you can substitute a different object to represent it, such as a free hand to represent a hammer or a knife, or a glass jar to represent a hot pot. The idea behind it is to create a new experiential memory in which the injury doesn't take place. The mental side of the technique is really the most important, because it's the mind that causes most of the ongoing stress. This consists of two parts, to be carried out as simultaneously as possible. One part is to bring all your attention into the present moment in which you are repeating the alternate non-contacting action. The success of the technique depends primarily on your ability to keep your mind on what is happening and not on what happened when the injury occurred or what might happen as a result of it. Doing this well requires an act of will. You must choose not to think of anything other than the repetitive, non-injurious action you are currently involved in. If stray thoughts come in, don't get upset. Just choose to bring your mind back to the present as often as necessary. The other mental part has to do with using words to help maintain your present moment focus and to help your body heal itself. My students and I have experimented with a lot of word combinations, but the all-time favorite remains, "Nothing happened. See? Nothing happened." Repeated over and over until the pain is gone. This affirmation was first used spontaneously by a woman whose friend was cut badly on the forehead when he fell while they were both water skiing. In this case, the man was dazed and could not do anything for himself. So the woman held him up in the water with one hand and, while shouting "nothing happened," repeatedly moved her other hand toward his head as if it were the ski that had cut him. When they were back on shore after being picked up by a boat, the blood on the man's forehead was wiped away and there was no sign of a cut. The fact that the man was dazed obviously contributed to the success of the technique because his mind was not able to get in the way. Naturally, you can use any other words or phrases that work for you. The purpose of the words, remember, is to help keep you focused in the present moment and to give a clear message to your body, which reinforces its healing work. You may have noticed that several times I've mentioned continuing the process until the pain subsides. In most cases, this is all you need to do, because when the pain is gone, the mind gets occupied with other things, and the body can do the rest of the healing on its own. Often, in a very short time, and to the degree that you are able to keep your mind off the original trauma, the redness of burns fades away, and no blisters are formed. Blood stops flowing from a cut, and the edges mend. Bruises don't form discoloration from broken blood vessels. The more severe the injury, the longer or more often you may need to do the technique, simply because it's a lot harder to keep your mind off the event or off the possible consequences. You may also have noticed that I haven't mentioned the healing of broken bones yet. That's because this use of the technique deserves special attention. I wouldn't expect instant or even rapid results with a compound fracture. That is, when the broken bone has pierced through the skin. Even fast results are probably unlikely in most cases because of the degree of trauma and generalized stress involved. However, I would expect that using the technique to whatever degree possible would greatly help to reduce the stress and aid the healing. The technique has been used very successfully with simple fractures of leg bones, arm bones, and finger bones. Normal medical attention, if available, is always called for in such cases, and setting the bone, if appropriate, ought to be done whenever possible. Nevertheless, I'd like to share a story about myself in which this technique was all I had to work with. The event took place on a very strenuous hiking trip up the Wailua River on Kauai. On the return near the end of the day, I decided, foolishly, to take a little used branch of the river by myself. In this part of the river, there were no trails on the banks, and it was necessary to walk in the river itself, clambering over the rocks in the stream. I was wearing hiking sandals that had already proven themselves very slippery on the stones. At one point, when I was climbing over a boulder, I stood up and slipped off. As I came crashing down, I put out my right hand to break my fall, and the first three fingers crumpled under the impact. The pain was intense, and my fingers were twisted in all directions. I sat down and immediately began swinging my right hand downward to the boulder, without contact, over and over. At the same time, I shouted, "Nothing happened," at the top of my lungs, and struggled to keep my mind in the present. It was a hard struggle, because images of the fall and remembrance of the impact kept trying to intrude, but I kept going for about 20 minutes. At the end of that time, almost all the pain was gone, and the first two fingers looked and felt normal. The third finger was straight, but swollen. I made my way home, kept up the work, and in 3 days my hand was completely normal. Curiously, a week after the event, I was sharing this experience with some friends when my third finger instantly became swollen. I used the technique again right then, and the swelling went away. Since that time, I've had to retrain my body's response to the event so that my finger doesn't swell up anymore when I tell people about it. So there you have it, a collection of my best ideas and techniques for healing yourself instantly, rapidly, fast, and any other way you can. The time limitations of this program preclude me from including many other techniques. So, to get a more complete perspective, may I recommend you to the printed edition of Instant Healing, published by Renaissance Books. In closing, first let me remind you that almost certainly you won't have been able to take in everything I've said with a single playing of this tape. Listen to this program as many times as you need to absorb and understand the information, and make it your own to work with. Second, don't be discouraged if a particular technique seems difficult. These techniques won't necessarily be easy, because you may have a lot of resistance to changing your habits. Use your common sense when applying these techniques. If you try one and it doesn't seem to help, use another. I know I've given you a lot to remember, so let me now condense the whole thing for you in the form of a simple Hawaiian proverb. Hua'olo loko ike aloha. Healing comes from within, by means of love. Mahalo.